Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. In the 31 years since Selena Quintanilla's murder, her music, her style, and her influence have been celebrated at countless quinceañeras, TV shows, drag shows, murals, museums, and literature. A collection of the latter honors Selena as a central figure in Mexican-American culture. The Selena Reader, Remembering the Queen of Tejano, is a collection of essays, short stories, memoir, and poetry. Frontera's producer, Maria Navarro, talked with the book's editors, Larissa Mercado López and Indalecio Isaac Hinojosa.
You both are actually from the Corpus Christi area, and of course that's the hometown of Selena Quintanilla, who is the topic of the Selena Reader. Before we talk about the book, talk to me a little bit about your own memories of the Queen of Tejano. And Isaac, I'll go ahead and start with you.
My initial memories of the Queen of Tejano is always just seeing her on Domingo Live or on TV, familiar with the music. You know, my father always loved playing Tejano music, so I always hear her on the radio. I knew some friends that claimed to be related to her. Later in life, I met very close friends who actually worked for Selena and knew her family very well, but I never got to meet her. So for me, Selena was just in the background of my lived experience, somebody from the neighborhood, somebody we knew, somebody that was always at our fiestas or at the dances.
Larissa, what about you? Do you have a similar experience?
Yeah, my memories are very much framed by, you know, before her passing and after her passing. So like Isaac's experiences, she was very much in the background of my life. We listened to Tejano music, you know, pretty regularly growing up in South Texas. She was always played at the quinceañeras and the weddings. And she was pretty ubiquitous for being, you know, somebody who was always on the air. And she was like air, right? In that she was all around us, but we didn't really, at least I personally didn't pay a whole lot of attention to her, not until she passed. Right. And when she passed, that's when I really started to look at her more closely as being, you know, somebody who created paths of possibilities for women in the Tejano industry, for women in general. Right. I really started to notice the impact that she had on our communities. I think that that was something that I wasn't really aware of because she was just, you know, another voice on the radio. But I also saw how closely people held her to them. As Isaac explained, I think we know a lot of people that wanted to claim her, right, as part of her family, as claiming to have been, you know, related to her, because she was very much somebody that was, you know, from our hometown and felt, you know, we felt that we could relate to as people from, you know, a working class community. She had that working class aesthetic to her while also being, you know, very glamorous. So I think for me, she represented possibility. I saw how people came together to collectively mourn her, you know, when she passed. And it inspired me to think about what I could do at a greater level, right, beyond my small hometown of Gregory, Texas.
Can I add to what Larissa just said? Because she was sort of like in our background, but it was her passing that really kind of like magnified her existence for us, I think. I mean, it amplified it as well. I mean, I was just shocked with the response after her death, you know, the media coverage, everyone trying to get, you know, memorabilia and the cassettes, the albums. I think for me at that time, I was just amazed at the response after her death, which then made it like, well, who was this? And then starting to look more closely at who she meant for us.
And so many people have that experience, right, of really looking at her impact after she died. And since then, we've had so many different projects and books and essays that have looked at Selena's impact and how she impacted Latinos and just people all across the world. But what inspired you all to want to gather this collection of really thoughtful essays, poems, this scholarly work about Selena as opposed to just memories? Why examine Selena through a more academic, in-depth approach and lens through this book?
So we knew that conversations had been happening academically about her, and we knew that there continued to be more kind of informal conversations among academics, whether it was talking about her in an analytical way or just about, you know, the inspiration that we continue to draw from her. So we wanted to create that opportunity for those who had been thinking about Selena within their disciplines to come together and be able to write in a way where they were able to apply frameworks and theories from their disciplines into more kind of analytical conversations about Selena. You know, we know that discussions of Selena are, you know, extremely interdisciplinary. You know, when we're talking about Selena, we're talking about language, right? We're looking at histories of English-only laws. You know, we're talking about what it means to be Tejana, what it means to be Mexican. So these ideas around authenticity. You know, we're talking about mestizaje and constructions of race and gender and sexuality. You know, we're looking more closely at the construction of genre, right, of Tejano music. And so even if we're not hyper aware of the complexity of the conversations that we're having, these are deep and complex conversations. And Selena provides us an entry point to explore more these ideas about identity and authenticity and cultural hybridity. And, you know, we also think about this collection as being just part of that larger memorialization of Selena. So it might be academic, but I like to place it within that larger landscape of public remembrances. And that's something that we do in the Mexican American community. We remember our loved ones are dead very well. And so I think about this collection as kind of a literary roadside memorial in that respect.
Larissa Mercado Lopez and Indalecio Isaac Hinojosa are the editors of the collection The Selena Reader, Remembering the Queen of Tejano. They're speaking with Frontera's producer, Maria Navarro. Mercado Lopez is a professor and department chair of Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies at California State University, Fresno. Hinojosa is a professor of English at Texas A&M University, Corpus Christi. The conversation continues next on Fronteras.
TPR shares the stories of our community, our challenges, and our victories. A legacy gift to Texas Public Radio ensures those stories live on. Learn how to create your legacy at tpr.org/legacy.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Selena Quintanilla Perez would have turned 55 years old this year. Her legacy was cemented almost immediately after her shocking death at age 23. Her impact as a Mexican-American icon has been felt across the generations. The new book, The Selena Reader, Remembering the Queen of Tejano, examines how Selena embodies Nepantla, the sense of being in between cultures, in between languages. It also examines her impact on the queer community and in the halls of academia. Fronteras producer Maria Navarro is talking today with the book's editors, Larissa Mercado Lopez and Indalecio Isaac Hinojosa.
And I think that you can see that intersectionality of Selena's ties to language and concepts of Nepantla and identity very much so through these essays. And the book is actually broken up into three different parts. So we have expressions and embodiments of Selena, the public remembrances, so the murals that are dedicated towards her, and then finally, Selena's stories that people carry with them. So tell me a little bit about the decision to split up this book into three different parts and examining these three different things.
Well, when we were first sort of putting the project together, we really wanted to build a very comprehensive collection, and we started to form these areas of how people were having these conversations about Selena. So we came up looking at first expressions because we wanted to include some creative work. We wanted to embed that creative work throughout the reader. so that the academic pieces also spoke to the creative work. And with that, we kind of like broke off those three main parts when we figured that aside from expressions, people were talking about how, say, performers embody Selena or how she's embodied in the artistic murals as part of iconography. And then we built a section dealing with the public remembrances with the study about the major sites here in Corpus Christi, and then found pieces to complement that particular anchor in that section. And then we thought of Sonia Aleman's piece for the Selena course that she designed, and it became part of curriculum at UTSA. And we thought then what pieces relate to this. We had the father-daughter experience of coming to age through Selena stories. I remember Larissa and I were working in our introduction, and we were like, we haven't given our Selena story. So we embedded a little bit of our stories in the introduction so that it made a cohesive collection with story throughout.
And I think that that's something that the book does so well, is that it really does give a comprehensive perspective and a differing perspective and views that you don't necessarily typically hear from when you think of Selena. So you're looking at the impact on the queer community that Selena had in queerness. It really does deep dive into those connections and stories more than you might just get when you feature a memoir about Selena. You're going into her impact within differing communities, right?
Something also is the language itself. We really wanted to show the polyvocal of English and Spanish, whether to italicize Spanish, not to italicize Spanish, whether some pieces were going to code switch between English and Spanish, and we wanted to include it all. And we were very much on the decision that we didn't want to do that. We want these individuals to reflect who they are and their own struggle with language.
I think it also shows some connections to Selena through language. We had quite a few authors talk about their own struggles with learning Spanish. And, you know, Selena providing that opportunity for them through learning the songs, right, through conversations with their tías and with their fathers, you know, about the songs, opening themselves up to learning more about the culture, learning more about the language. You know, they really felt that sense of connection with Selena, who was raised, you know, initially as an English speaker. And in the conversations with their family members, they explored more of some of those reasons around why they were raised that way. And, you know, what were some of their motivations for wanting to learn Spanish, right, beyond, you know, wanting to maybe sing Selena songs better.
And when we look at Selena as a figure and her impact, I mean, she died at 23. Her legacy has really outlived the time that she was alive. 30 years after her death, she's still such a popular cultural icon for the Latino community, for beyond. A lot of people don't have those firsthand memories of Selena. I'm thinking of myself. I was born way after, and so what I know of her, I know from stories of others and from what I've seen and from what I've read. And so it creates new memories and new interactions with things like the murals and with, you know, these stories that other people have. So Selena's longevity has been around for a long time and continues to show the impact of Selena. So talk to me a little bit about her ongoing impact and her ongoing legacy and how highlighting these different stories, perspectives, poems helps contribute to that.
Yeah, so I think what you described there was what Deborah Paredes refers to as Selenidad, right? It is the generative afterlife of Selena. It's the continuous celebrations of Selena, the continuous public remembrances of her. It is the refashioning of her, the remaking of her, the transmitting, you know, of her. And she continues to be popular as she is because we do a very good job in the Mexican American community of passing down memories, right? And I think Selena has provided that opportunity to teach, right, from one generation to the other, right, what it means to be Tejana, what it means to be Mexican, Chicana. We use her songs to teach the younger generation how to dance, right? We share our memories in that way. And so, you know, the collection is one way in which we continue to not just share her memories, because there are actually not a lot of strong memories of her reflected in the collection of when she was alive, but it's what came afterwards, right? And that's kind of the magic that we're interested in highlighting and looking to see how our communities through Selena both collectively grieve her and collectively heal.
I would add just what Larissa had mentioned earlier. Our Selena reader is definitely sort of a contribution to that collective memorial of Selena. And with that, we hope it engages people to have a story with her, you know, to continue that process of story making and talking about Selena, whether, you know, they've learned something through the movie, the biopic Selena, or, you know, the recent documentary that was featured on Netflix, produced by her family. So I would just say, you know, that's part of the contribution of the readers for people to engage with Selena and continue to have story with her.
And looking towards you all, when you were compiling the Selena reader and you were looking at these different essays and this different scholarly work and these memorials, everything like that, Larissa, I'll start with you. What was, if you can think of one, what was a work that stuck with you while compiling the Selena reader?
A contribution that I really appreciated was Joe Jimenez's creative kind of memoir piece, where he's looking at kind of how Selena enabled him to connect with a part of his body that he felt some shame around. As a brown gay man, you know, he felt as if he couldn't really explore and claim and have any kind of pride in certain parts of his body. And she enabled him to kind of connect, you know, back with his body and think about the possibilities, you know, for feeling empowered and proud of it.
Isaac, what about you? What was something that maybe stuck out to you while compiling the Selena reader?
There are several pieces, only because we work so closely with our contributors. I immediately think of Divas Latinas, only because I'm a viewer of RuPaul's Drag Race, and I thought it was a very interesting conversation in how Ruben spoke about the Divas Latinas and the significance they have, and particularly Valentina, and the backlash that Valentina experienced. But I'm also fond a lot of the low writing with Selena, a Chicano father-daughter pedagogy. That creative nonfiction piece, I think, really touched me, because those are conversations I've kind of had with my dad in trying to understand what I was doing in academia, and the way it spoke about navigating the spaces of academia as somebody who doesn't feel they belong. And then the support from the father is just like, you know, make your own way. You're going to do it. Don't back down. I mean, that piece really touched me, because I saw myself in that piece with my own experiences.
All of them really offer, I think, a perspective that is so different from one another, from looking at your body in one way to looking at the relationship with your parents in another way, and how Selena kind of prompts that. So I think that those are all really indicative of just the range and the scope that the Selena reader features. Any final thoughts, anything that I haven't asked or anything that we haven't touched upon that you all want to leave off on?
Larissa approached me on wanting to do the Selena reader, and it's something we wanted to put together because we were also kind of looking at the landscape of artists being studied in academia. And we think back of like Beyoncé and Formation remixing Black feminism. And then of course the Lemonade reader that studied Beyoncé's visual album. So we knew conversations in academia were taking place on Selena, and we wanted to put something together that people can use, because we saw that being done with other artists as well.
Yeah, definitely. And the popularity of her, kind of the fervor around her, has not really diminished a lot in the past few years. I would even argue that it's grown. We don't have a lot of figures that are as widely accepted by the mainstream. And so it kind of feels like almost like an acceptable form of resistance, right, to some of the, you know, the fascism that, you know, Mexican-American communities have been feeling, the anti-Mexican, anti-immigrant sentiment. It feels like almost like an act of resistance to continue to claim and to remember and to celebrate her. And Selena herself was not a political person at all. She didn't really have a platform outside of joy, right? And these days, right, being joyful and really like prioritizing joy and focusing on it feels like an act of resistance.
I think that's the perfect way to leave off. So Isaac, Larissa, thank you so much for talking with me about the Selena Reader and about Selena's impact. I really appreciate your input.
Thank you so much.
Larissa Mercado Lopez and Indalecio Isaac Hinojosa are the editors of the collection, The Selena Reader, Remembering the Queen of Tejano. Mercado Lopez is a professor and department chair of Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies at California State University, Fresno. Hinojosa is a professor of English at Texas A&M University, Corpus Christi. They've been speaking with Fronteras producer Marianne Navarro. Fronteras editors are Dan Katz and Yvette Benavides. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.